CBSI on the World. I'm John Batchelor. To Behind the Black, Bob Zimmerman, watching North Korea. North Korea building a spaceport, Bob has reported. And now, Bob, what is Cholima 1? What has happened? Good evening to you.
Cholima 1 is actually the third attempt by North Korea to put a satellite into orbit with its own rocket. The first time they launched this, it failed. The second time they launched it back in November, it was a success. They got a spy satellite into orbit. That's what they claimed. And they said they're going to continue to do so. And as you mentioned, I've reported on this. They have a spaceport they built on their western coast for the purposes of launching orbital satellites. And so they tried early this week to launch the Cholima the third time. Cholima 1 is the name of the rocket. They had announced, they had notified Japan that the drop zones for the stages was going to be in the oceans as it headed. They're going to launch it from that western coastal seaport, but it was going to head east over North Korea and drop stages in the oceans, the China Sea, and near Japan and near the Philippines. However, the first stage exploded right after launch, very shortly after launch, so it was a complete failure. Because of its flight path over North Korea, the debris, which includes toxic hypergolic fuels, will dissolve your skin if you get it on you, probably poured down on top of North Korean citizens somewhere in North Korea. They're copying the Chinese in their approach to their citizenry and rocketry, John.
So they launched over their population, and the
that's correct. They have a coastal location, but the trouble with the western coast is if you're going to do any equatorial launches that are going to try to be near the equator in orbit or anywhere near the equator, you got to go east. And so going east, they're going right over their own country. And the country is small enough that if the rocket had been successful, the first stage and other stages would have dropped in the ocean.
Right.
Some near Philippines and some near Japan, which could be a threat to them. But if it blows up, it lands on top of North Korea.
There was speculation that the visit to Vostochny with Vladimir Putin that happened the end of last year led to an exchange of information technology that permitted North Korea to move from that first failure to a second success. Is there any clarity on that? Because now they've failed again.
No, there's no clarity. We've got to remember this is a bankrupt, totalitarian communist government, so it's poor. So they put every resource they can into a rocketry program like this. They'll get some successes, but there's no depth within their culture, manufacturing depth. And so you're going to have failures. You're going to have very difficult to do this well. It doesn't mean they can't. I mean, the Soviet Union proves you can. But in the long run, they're going to have problems. And that's really where we are.
And we go to President Yoon of South Korea. What are they proposing, Bob?
Yes, this whole talk today is going to be the Asian report, I guess, John. South Korea this week announced it is establishing its own version of NASA. They're going to call it CASA, which stands for Korea Aerospace Administration. They just came up with a term that would produce a CASA instead of a NASA. And this is basically a reworking of an agency that had existed previously that was more science-based. Now, and this is kind of what we did in the U.S. when we changed the NACA into NASA. They've changed that now into a space agency focused entirely on space. It's an interesting question what the ramifications of this in South Korea. South Korea has recently budgeted a lot of money to its space industry. And CASA has about $500 million budget per year, and it's got like 300 employees. The head of the agency, when this announcement was made, talked at great length about how they have to do public-private partnerships. This is in NASA language. Basically, hiring private companies to do things for them, not designing it themselves. But at the same time, they announced in this program, in this announcement, that the agency is going to be focusing on promoting reusable launch vehicles, developing the country's own GPS system, and put together a lunar lander program with a goal of landing on the moon by 2032. And the question is going to be, how are they going to do that? Are they going to design the things themselves, or are they going to propose it and ask the private sector to build it? And this is an unknown at the point. They say they're going to ask the private sector, but that's not been what South Korea has done in the past. They have a rocket, but it's a government-built rocket. They've been trying to launch it. They've had one success and one failure. So we'll see how it plays out over time. They made a big deal of trying to copy what NASA's doing, which is to use the private sector, but it's unknown whether that will happen, John.
And, Bob, what is their mission? What do they hope to accomplish?
They say their goal is to invigorate a private aerospace industry within South Korea. And, of course, it's prestige. They want to be able to show that they can do things as well. And South Korea has the North Korean problem, which we just talked about. It's an enemy right to the north, trying to launch things. And so they have their own security concerns getting reconnaissance satellites into orbit. So it's all those things, John. And the question, of course, is in trying to foster a aerospace industry, you can do it one of two ways. You can ask the government to build everything and just hire private companies to just design what the government wants and owns, which doesn't work very well. Or you can have a proposal program, but then ask the private sector to build and own what they build. And that's more successful.
X-37B, the famous, now, if I can remember the sequence, it was Air Force and went to NASA, or was NASA and went to Air Force?
It went to Air Force. NASA never finishes anything when it builds it itself, John. So it went to the Air Force, that's right. And it's X-37B is a Boeing mini shuttle that launches up in space and comes back and down. The Air Force has a fleet of two, and they've both flown multiple missions. I think the longest is over 2 years. But the story here has to do with China's copy of the X-37B. It's dubbed Shenlong, we think, because they've been very secretive about this. And it's now presently on its third flight. The first flight only lasted 2 days. The second flight lasted 276 days. The present flight is now seven months long. Right after launch, they released six small satellites from this mini shuttle. We do not know what those satellites did. They were probably all CubeSats. We don't know what they did. We don't know any other information. What makes the story interesting now is that there is evidence that the Shenlong mini shuttle released an object last week on May 24th in a comparable orbit. And so we do not know why it did that. The previous flight, they did the same thing and then proceeded to do maneuvering and recapture maneuvers. And so it's very possible that's what this thing will do. It's also possible that it has a completely different purpose. We don't know, because China literally has told us almost nothing about their mini shuttle, John.
All right, SpaceX in Beijing. Apparently the Chinese continue their really, really devoted way of imitating everything that Elon Musk has done. So they're now planning their own Starlink. Is that that the ambition, Bob?
John, this is the third of China's Starlink concepts. A Chinese company, pseudo company, I like to call them, because I don't believe any Chinese company is really private. But this company has filed plans with the International Telecommunications Union. This is required if you're going to put a satellite up internationally. They filed their plans for putting up a 10,000 satellite constellation. And this would, yes, do the same kind of things that Starlink is doing, that OneWeb is doing, that the Amazon Kuiper system wants to do, and it would do the same thing that two other Chinese proposed constellations would do. In fact, this 10,000 satellite constellation is the third one proposed by Chinese entities, other pseudo companies. And so what we got is the possibility of anywhere from, about five different gigantic satellites being proposed, with only one presently in orbit, but all the others are saying they're going to be launching sometime in the next 3 years. It's going to get crowded up there. There's no doubt this is going to be an issue, that there's going to be coordination issues between these various constellations.
All right, let's go to the videotape. Bob has a posting about a Long March 2D first stage descending. What does this demonstrate, Bob?
Yes, this happened last week. There was a Long March 2 2D launch. It put up some satellites. Post the launch, China put up a short video showing that the first stage had grid fins. This is copying SpaceX again. In fact, they look almost identical to SpaceX's grid fins on its Falcon 9. But if these grid fins were not there for the purposes of landing that first stage vertically, what they're there for, and this is the fifth time they've put these fins on their first stages on the various Long March rockets, the idea is to control the return of the first stage so where it crashes on the ground can be pinpointed more precisely. That way they can maybe bring it down in a place where they know nobody is, no homes are, no buildings, no private homes. And they've done that in the past, crashed right on streets where people live. This way they can control it, bring it down, and it uses hypergolic fuels, which once again will dissolve your skin if you get them on you. This will allow them to control it better. And so they've now released the video. We know they're doing this. And that's actually a good thing. They shouldn't be dropping toxic fuel on their citizens' heads.
Let's go to the question again of reusability. Does this suggest that China doesn't have that capability yet? That they're going
to... They don't have... all their Long March rockets they presently have, and they have a whole fleet of different kinds, none of them have reusability, and they were all designed before reusability was even considered possible. China is very innovative with other people's ideas. So they see that the grid fins and parachutes help control the return of a spacecraft, of a first stage, and that they have a problem with their first stages crashing on their citizens' heads, and it's bad PR. So they are trying to use this technology to improve that situation, and that's a good thing. At the same time, a number of their pseudo companies, as well as the government itself with its new Long March rockets, are trying to introduce that reusability. They definitely are aggressively trying to do that. Unlike a lot of the big space launch companies in the United States and in Europe, the Chinese had quickly embraced this idea and have been trying to steal or copy it and bring it into fruition in their own nation. And that, I give them credit.
I just wanted to get the detail. This is a difficult maneuver, that reusability. It's not straightforward.
SpaceX makes this look so simple, John. You could snap your fingers and anyone do it.
Right.
But it isn't simple. It is complicated. It is not something easy. But the technology nowadays exists to make it possible. It's not impossible. Give you an example. Drones. People buy drones all the time. Well, if you own a drone, you know that you can just press a button and the drone will automatically return to the spot it took off from. And that's because its software looks at the ground and knows where the ground is, and it comes back to the same spot. Well, that's the same kind of software you need on a first stage to get it back to land on a drone ship. And so this technology does exist. But it's not simple. It is rocket science. You have to do the work and the due diligence to make it happen. And China is trying to do that with many of its pseudo companies. And Rocket Lab's trying to do that in the United States, and SpaceX is doing it, and we'll hope some other companies will come along and start doing it as well.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going exploring. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.